Don Boyd is a senior fellow with the Rockefeller Institute in Albany, New York, and the Rockefeller Institute studies state budgets. So that's why we're talking to him with all the issues that Illinois has been going through here over the last several years. Don, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the Rockefeller Institute, just kind of your mission out there. What kind of things do you do out in Albany, New York?
We are the public policy research arm of the State University of New York. Among other things, we study the management and finances of state and local governments. I work particularly on state and local finance. Others work on Medicaid and many other important issues.
Let's talk about Illinois' overall financial picture for a moment. Just, I guess, kind of the overall picture, including the economy, the budget issues, pension shortfalls. What do you see when you look at Illinois right now?
It's the state you don't want to be. It's in an extraordinarily difficult situation that, of course, much of it is the result of years and years and years of, quite frankly, avoiding some choices that are appearing to come to a head. Those years and years of choices, of course, in particular relate to pensions and other, you know, other budgetary matters as well. So that, you know, the combination of very large unfunded liabilities and a pretty clear court decision that says they're supposed to be paid puts, I think, Illinois in a more difficult situation than probably any other state.
Well, as we look at that, the pension shortfall, which you mentioned, I believe at last count I saw $111 billion, the shortfall there. As you mentioned, those benefits constitutionally protected, that was just upheld by the Illinois Supreme Court here recently. So as you look at that shortfall, Don, what options does Illinois have right now?
It seems pretty clear to me from the decision that those benefits really must be paid under the terms of the state constitution as they now exist. What that means is, my goodness, if you were to try to do it all through revenue or spending, there's likely to be very, very substantial, you know, tax increases or spending cuts. Now, obviously, voters, given enough time to navigate the legal process, can change state constitutions. I don't know the details of how that can be done in Illinois, but that, of course, is yet another option to essentially override the judgment of the state Supreme Court. But absent that, you know, you're talking, I think, about significant tax increases or spending cuts.
It seems, Don, that it's kind of a snowball effect here for Illinois because their poor fiscal management has led to a poor credit rating, which leads to higher interest rates when the state tries to borrow, which kind of makes this even tougher than it would be, say, for a state with a better credit rating.
Well, that's for sure. While the cost of a lowered credit rating is probably not the largest, it is not the largest problem that Illinois or any state that gets into a situation similar would face, it compounds the difficulty. It certainly makes it more difficult.
And let's talk about maybe what some other states have done. You said that Illinois is maybe in the worst situation of any state in the country when it comes to this situation. What are some other states that have had to deal with pretty significant public pension shortfalls, and what have they tried to do to alleviate the problems in those states?
So as you think about pension benefits, first of all, you know, to be clear, you know, in general, they are a promise. And so that puts any state and local government that wants to change pensions in a way that will save them money in a difficult position because it means essentially breaking promises. Now, there are ways, if you will, there are three kinds of employees you might think about. Those who are already retired, those who are currently working for you, and those you haven't yet hired. All of the pension shortfall, if you will, is associated with or virtually all the people who are already retired or the people who are working for you now for the service they've already given. So to get at that unfunded liability, quite frankly, you either have to cut benefits for retirees or benefits already earned by the existing workforce. That's a very difficult thing to do politically and legally. The law varies from state to state. What is easiest to do politically and legally, you know, without bound, is changing benefits for people who don't get work for you, for new hires. And that's, quite frankly, the vast majority of what's been done. A very substantial majority, virtually all states, have changed pension benefits or pension funding rules in some manner since the recession. So there have been a lot of changes, but the vast bulk of them affect new hires. What that means is, and by the way, that doesn't come without cost either. I mean, all governments, just like private employers, want to be competitive. So it clearly is a cut, if you will, in the compensation of your new hires, and it does make you less competitive. Whether that's a real-world concern as an employer or not probably depends on each state's situation. But that's the bulk of what's been done. There have been some exceptions to that where, in particular, COLAs, the cost of living adjustments, or in Illinois, it's not really a cost of living adjustment, but the escalator on pensions. There have been some cases where those have been cut, and that really does reduce the unfunded liability somewhat. And so New Jersey has done a bit of that, and Illinois, of course. But in most cases, say take New York, where I am, there were substantial reductions in benefits for new hires. That eventually does affect the finances, but it doesn't deal, quite frankly, with large unfunded liabilities.
Illinois, as you mentioned, has addressed that somewhat with the new hires. They did that about 4 years ago, I believe. They had a new Tier 2 system that took effect, and as you said, certainly that does have some impact over time. But with the state's current liability still, well over $100 billion. It sounds like basically your recipe to fix this is some tough medicine that includes probably some tax increases and some spending cuts.
Well, I think that's right. And, these liabilities, Illinois has gone many, many years of paying far less than what actuaries recommend. It is not alone in underpaying its contributions, but it is an extraordinary outlier. Only New Jersey, I think, comes close in terms of the extent to which it has chosen not to pay what the actuaries have requested. So in that circumstance, it is so whether folks will consider, changing the benefit structures themselves, through the Constitution, that's obviously an option, I think, that some folks will want to consider as well. But it's taxes and spending, and it looks to me like the only way to get at benefits is through the Constitution. And again, that's clearly breaking a promise,
Yeah, of course. Talking with Don Boyd, senior fellow with the Rockefeller Institute in Albany, New York. You mentioned the shortfalls here over the last many years here in Illinois, paying less in than what was recommended by actuaries. I think the example that stands out the most to me in that regard was, I think it was maybe about 7, 8, 9 years ago when Rod Blagojevich was in the governor's mansion, and I think everybody knows what happened to good old Rod. But he worked through a deal with the legislature, and they called it a pension holiday at the time, where they didn't pay into the pension and, kicking the can down the road, so to speak. Can you talk about the impact a decision like that has in the long term?
Sure. A variety of states have kind of had pension holidays, not to the extent of Illinois. The way pension funds work, they're invested in in assets. The typical plan assumes it's going to earn somewhere around 7.5% or 8% a year. They've been criticized for that as being overly optimistic. But in any event, some years they'll do better, some years they'll do worse. Governments sometimes take their pension holidays after they've done better. The problem is there are undoubtedly years in which they'll do worse than expected. So if you take all the good news and, if you will, spend it by not making contributions, therefore allowing whether it's spending increases in other areas or tax reductions, that takes the good news, but bad news is bound to come. So that's one of the dangers of pension holidays, is it puts you in a circumstance where if every year you either meet your targets and take any excess for other purposes, or you don't meet your targets, then on average you're going to fall short. So that's a problem.
And Don, if you could just talk about the impact that the Great Recession of 2008-2009 had on public pension plans and how generally some of them have been able to bounce back from that, and what has kept Illinois' pension plan from maybe bouncing back as much as some others?
The typical pension plan is now invested somewhere two-thirds to the typical public pension plan, somewhere two-thirds to maybe 70% in equity-like investments, whether, you know, stocks or maybe real estate or alternative investments, hedge funds. Those investments are extremely volatile and sensitive to market conditions, and funds lost more than 30% in the Great Recession. It's really devastating. They have about $3.7 trillion nationwide invested, again, two-thirds in equity-like investments. So they've had big drops. There hasn't been a real recovery in pension fund assets yet. It's just that Illinois started out much, much worse and has continued to deteriorate. There's been some improvement. We've had a couple of good market years. Certainly 2013 and 2014 were good, but the typical plan is still funded in the kind of low 70% range. While Illinois is doing worse by far than the others, in part because of its very, very bad behavior, contribution behavior, the others, in no way are they anywhere near out of the woods.
What is a healthy funding level for public pensions?
Honestly, 100%. I mean, there are some arguments given occasionally for not hitting 100%, and that includes the fact, quite frankly, that it's tempting when you hit 100% to start not making full contributions, to start enhancing or enriching benefits, as many states did back two decades ago. But they ultimately, especially as the workforce population ages and gets closer and closer to retirement because of the, kind of the aging baby boomers, it's all the more important to be approaching 100% funding. There's an occasional myth that I know of, honestly, no one reputable who supports that 80% is good enough. But the truth is, funds need ultimately to have 100%.
And Don, if you could just go over real quickly the worst case scenario for Illinois, if they don't get this situation resolved, what will happen in the next several years?
Well, I mean, the court was very clear that these pensions have to be paid. So there are a variety of worst-case scenarios. They include, significant tax increases or significant service cuts or significant infrastructure cuts or some combination of all those things, none of which is good for the economy. You can drive people and businesses to neighboring states with higher taxes. You can harm the needy with cuts in services. You can damage, if you will, the productive potential of your economy through cuts in infrastructure. We'd all like to think that you can solve these problems by eliminating waste and abuse. Undoubtedly, in every government budget, there's an opportunity for some of that, but not of the magnitude we're talking here. So, it's really, there's potential damage to the economy. And again, the alternatives of, there are also scenarios under which, given enough years, the fund runs out of cash. So it's a dire situation.
All right. Don Boyd, senior fellow with the Rockefeller Institute in Albany, New York, studies state to finance for the Rockefeller Institute. Don, thank you very much for your time today.
Okie doke. Thank you.